TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. And I'm filling in for Mike Ryan on The Mike Ryan Show. And this hour, we have Dr. Matt Shelton from New Zealand coming up shortly. But before then, we have a few news items I want to look at. And of course, Sonia Bailey will be back with me again. So we have leader urges Jews to leave Germany for Israel. The leader of a Jewish community in Brandenburg, Simek Gorlick, said in an open letter published on Wednesday that Germany is intrinsically anti-Semitic and any Jews serious about their religion should leave, adding that he is moving to Israel. And he said, with all its anti-Jewish foreign and domestic policies, the country has proven that anti-Semitism is an inseparable part of the state political ideology. And he went on to say, you can't live in this country now as a Jew, and I don't want to live in this country anymore, he added. Now, the Jerusalem Post newspaper described Gorlick's letter as a furious bill of particulars. One of those particulars was that the German Chancellor has brought in as refugees millions of anti-Semitic Muslims who are attacking Jews and Jewish institutions. So it seems to me that the issue is Germany has had a horrific legacy with Adolf Hitler, undoubtedly a history of anti-Semitism. The level of anti-Semitism now, I'm not too sure, but what I do know for sure, you can't totally eliminate that. I mean, it would be nice if we could, but I think, there still would be an element of anti-Semitism in the country. But I see certain powers, certain interests wanting to escalate those tensions, escalate the tensions between Jews and Christians and Muslims and so forth. And who does that suit at the end of the day? And certainly all the economic problems that we've had, which have encouraged migration, the military problems that we've had in the world in recent years have encouraged more migration. If we didn't have the so-called war on terror, we would have never have had the millions and millions of people, refugees, trying to flee from the various areas, and Europe wouldn't be having so many people from countries and so many Muslims coming into Europe. So it's certain interests will try and manipulate that, and it's not very good. I think we can live in harmony as human beings, value our uniqueness of human beings regardless of what our faith is, what our ideologies. We're going to have debates, and that's a normal part of life. But I don't like to see that stoking up of division. Another news item, US voters don't want Biden to run for re-election. More than two-thirds of voters for the US House of Representative candidates do not want President Joe Biden to run for re-election in 2024. According to the early results of an exit poll conducted by Edison Research, fewer than 6 out of 10 Democratic voters said that Biden should seek a second term. Roughly 9 in 10 Republican voters and more than 7 in 10 independent voters said that they do not want him to run again. And no wonder. I'm not too surprised at all. Biden is losing his mind. He's not good for America. He's not good for the world. He's an embarrassment. I don't think we can say that enough. I don't see any possibility that he will be running, whether or not he wants to. I think his mind as well tell him he's on the way out. But nonetheless, I would have thought some Republicans probably would want him to run just because it'd make it a lot easier for them. But I don't think it's going to happen somehow. And in another news headline here, France ends anti-jihadist Africa op. President Emmanuel Macron announced on Wednesday that France's troubled nine-year counterterrorism operation Barkhane in northern Africa is officially over. He insisted that French military support for African countries will continue, but accordingly to new principles, he said. Some 3,000 French troops remain deployed in Niger, however you like to pronounce that one, Chad, Burkina Faso, and they're tasked with fighting terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State and others. Now, I think it's a real concern, the Africa situation and the military interventions in Africa. Certainly over the many, many years that we've had military interventions in Africa, they haven't helped Africa. I think what will help Africa is economic development, infrastructure, just an economy in general. That will help Africa, not more military interventions. Okay, for a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT Radio.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, cuz here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has said that he would be open to a meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in the next 9 days as leaders from around the world gather for a range of international summits in Asia, including the B20, G20, APEC, ASEAN Australia, and East Asia Summit. Speaking at a press conference in Canberra on the 9th of November, the Prime Minister said that he had always believed that dialogue between the countries was a good thing. TNT Radio News producer Sonia Bailey is here to talk with me about what this means for Australians and the world. Welcome back, Sonia.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, this one really just makes me want to go and crank up the aircon because of all the hot air. It just, you know, he couldn't be bothered. Albanese just couldn't be bothered going to COP27. He's made absolutely zero plans to actually engage with any of the other world leaders at what I would think is one of the most crucial times in the world for nation leaders to actually be openly communicating with one another. So it's quite interesting that he has come out now while COP27 is rounding up to a close, that he's saying that he would love to have this conversation with the Chinese leader, yet has made absolutely no plans to actually engage in that conversation.
Mm. And I think that an important point there is that, sure, we can have engagement with Xi Jinping, but Australia is deeply committed to an Anglo-American military alliance, and that alliance has upset China in recent months. What's the conversation going to look like? I don't think it's going to go anywhere unless Australia backs off from aggression in Taiwan, but that doesn't seem likely. So what would be achieved in the dialogue anyway?
That's right. And I think what's interesting is that although Albanese has come out and said, oh, you know, look, I've got no problems having a conversation with Xi Jinping, he's also said, I've made it very clear that dialogue is a good thing. And so if a meeting is arranged with Xi, then that would be a positive thing. But he's actually not planned any sort of trip. He's not made any arrangements to go to any of the conferences that are being held and the international summits in Asia. He's made no plans to go. And I find that quite surprising because within the first 8 weeks of his election to Prime Minister in May of this year, he spent 7 of the first 8 weeks of his holding the seat of Prime Minister, he spent that time overseas. He travelled the world and visited other nations. He essentially was elected to Prime Minister and was straight on a plane to other countries. and we didn't see him for 2 months. So it surprises me that now that there are actually multiple summits being held around the world that nations leaders would be attending to have these kind of conversations, he's actually not attending any of them and doesn't seem to have any plans to go.
It's surprising that Albanese did not attend COP27, considering that the Labor Party has been more aggressive in pushing for a zero net carbon and essentially won an election on that issue. Unfortunately, many people fell for that and voted for Labor and the Greens and the Teals, who all pushed this agenda, and they thought that the Liberal Party were sort of not going fast enough to save us from a climate disaster, and unfortunately many voters bought into that lie. So Albanese, he had the opportunity to go to COP27. He didn't go. What do you make of that, Sonia?
Well, I find it quite interesting that he didn't go, considering, you know, as I mentioned, he spent a lot of time jet-setting off around the world when he was first elected. But we in Australia are also part of the alliance of AUKUS. So you would think that at least those three nations leaders would be taking every opportunity to meet together in a united front as frequently as possible. So it seems very odd that he would not have attended COP27. And I could understand not attending every single summit in every single nation that's held throughout the year, but you would think that this would be the summit to attend if he attended nothing else. So it does strike me as odd, and he doesn't seem to be participating in anything during the period that COP27 has been held that would warrant him not attending. To then turn around and say, oh, yeah, I'd be happy to talk with any of the other world leaders. He's not actually instigating any of those conversations. He's not instigating any meetings. So it seems to me that he's taking almost a passive role whilst saying that he wants to take an assertive role.
And it's interesting, here he is saying, I'll be willing to meet and have dialogue and it's all good with Xi Jinping. But at the same time, Defence Minister Richard Marles has announced a joint task force between the Australian Federal Police and ASIO, otherwise known as the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, to counter foreign interference. Now, I don't know that China would be too happy about that announcement. If they had some dialogue between the leaders, heads of state, that might be a subject of discussion that China would be raising some questions, don't you think, Sonia?
Yeah, most definitely. But knowing Albanese as we do, I mean, he was called Each Way Albo during his campaign for Prime Minister. He is absolutely a fence sitter and he will more than happily have a foot in each camp at every possible opportunity. So it doesn't surprise me that when he's confronted at a press conference and asked these types of questions, that he takes almost a neutral stance. He says that he'd be more than happy to have these conversations with these nations' leaders, but by the same token, he's also making no active progression towards actually having those conversations. I think it also, as we've discussed over the last few days in some of these news moments, we've talked about the CCP creating police stations in various nations around the world where they're policing their own people in other countries. And we've also discussed the possibility that UK, US, Canadian and Australian Defence Force personnel have essentially been headhunted by the Chinese to train some of their military. So I think he really is holding his cards close to his chest, be that intentionally or be that through his limp-wristed, spineless notion of wanting to sit on the fence. Really, time is going to tell whether he actually has the gumption to step up and have some of these tough conversations, to step up and actually back his own defence ministers in investigating whether any wrongdoing has actually occurred by Defence Force in relation to training Chinese military. I really don't think he's got what it takes.
Yeah, I agree, Sonia. He doesn't seem to be a real leader. He seems to be floundering. And I've seen that well before he became Prime Minister. He didn't look leadership material. It surprised me that he became Prime Minister in the first place.
Oh, but he got a haircut and new glasses.
No, it's pretty sad the lack of leadership that we have in our nations. And surely out of all the Australians in the parties, they could choose someone better. But, you know, that's a disappointing situation there, where it's just a lot of hot air, as you say. They're not really intending serious dialogue. I think there's a lot of political posturing there. Briefly, we've only got a minute left. How much influence do you think the media has in all this, in the decisions that our Prime Minister makes?
Oh, I think it's definitely media-driven and Greens Party-driven. I think that it's a small minority of people that make a lot of noise, and unfortunately our Prime Minister bows to it.
Yeah, I think so. So I think we've run out of time. Sonia, great to have you again. We have to go to a break now. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Might be days before we get the results of the election.
Jean-Pierre said that waiting days is how this is supposed to work. No, Corinne, it's not. Back when we had paper ballots, we had results the same day. Here in New York, we used to have mechanical machines that were called one-arm bandits, which is also the nickname for slot machines that are rigged, because you would flip down the little lever over the name of the person you wanted to vote. There was a whole matrix of different people with little levers above their name, and you'd click down the little lever. And then to enter your vote, there was a big handle right across the machine, and the handle also operated the curtain. So you'd walk into the booth, flip the handle to the left, close the curtain, reset the machine, make all your vote selections, and then you move the handle to the right. Opens the curtain and it registers your vote. Or did it? They were rigged just like slot machines could be. So rigged machines are nothing new. We know all about them here in New York State. But to say that waiting days to find out the results of an election is nothing more than a cover story for corruption. They need to figure out how many votes they need to cheat by, and all of a sudden, oh, what do you know? Several days later, they're going to find votes.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and arm.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org right now.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, filling in for Mike Ryan. Now, TNT Radio ran a report this week about an mRNA production facility being established in partnership between the Victorian government, the federal government, university research centres, and Moderna. Moderna will manufacture a large range of mRNA vaccines against respiratory viruses, including COVID-19, seasonal influenza, respiratory syncytial virus, and other potential vaccines. This gene therapy project is being cheered on by the media with no questions asked. Taxpayers know nothing about the total contributions from the various partners and what, in total, Australian taxpayers will provide beyond the $50 million from the Victorian government and $25 million from the federal government. It's understandable that these people are oblivious to evidence of injuries caused by the mRNA injections. New Zealand doctors speaking out with science are concerned with informed consent, emergency use of novel treatments, inadequate surveillance of the jab, ways to stay healthy and early treatment of COVID-19. Dr. Matt Shelton has been a medical doctor since 1985, mostly in primary care and general practice. He has been a lecturer and examiner in integrative medicine and believes passionately in ethical medicine that seeks to discover and resolve causes of health issues in treating the whole person. Welcome to TNT Radio, Matt.
Hi, Jeremy. It's good to be back.
Yeah, likewise. Now, can you explain simply why mRNA vaccines are, as they are, inappropriately described?
As vaccines? Well, they're more appropriately thought of actually as medical devices. So it'll be the first time ever that a product has made the body produce a little bit of the bug that you're trying to raise immunity to, rather than exposing the body from outside to a bit of the bug. So they're taken up by many cells in the body, mostly the ones that line the blood vessels, because that's where the receptors are. And they essentially hijack some of the cell machinery to produce this protein that I'm sure we've all heard of, and I bet many of your listeners are very well informed, called the spike protein, which then is either ejected from the cell surface or embedded in the cell surface, and then you provoke various reactions, including supposedly an immune response. Just got to quickly say, I'm speaking not as a medical doctor right now, because I don't have a license. After 37 years, I'm currently unregistered, but you know, I can't unlearn everything I've learned and you know, drop on my experience. But I'm certainly not representing myself as a medical doctor right now, and that's a whole nother story.
That's for sure. But you still are allowed to have your doctor title, is that correct? Because you got a PhD, is that right?
Well, no, I've got a medical degree and a few postgraduate qualifications as well. So I can call myself a doctor for sure. But essentially, saying anything in this domain, you know, does expose me and many others in my situation to the risk of, you know, practicing medicine without a license, with all the usual, you know, worries that go there. But look, this thing is bigger than any one of us. And as many people as possible have really got to be trying to keep the conversation going and having debates.
Yeah, well, there's obviously an attempt to censor people and deregister doctors who know what they're talking about, but they're not following a certain narrative. Now, these are mRNA, so-called vaccines. Are they already being marketed for the flu, RSV, monkeypox or moneypox, if you like to call it that, or only COVID-19?
Well, they're currently being sold, obviously, for COVID-19. But the platform is obviously a huge, going to be a huge money spinner, or at least that's the hope for the drug companies, because they, you know, they're claiming that it's been proved safe already, which is kind of ironic, when you know, every single monitoring system is screaming blue murder and flagging the largest signals they've ever been in these. You know, in these programs, but in theory, you can use it to get the cell to churn out any protein that you want. So you know, the list of potential targets is probably limited only by our imaginations, and certainly there's talk of combined, you know, flu, RSV, and COVID shots that people will be having once a year. And that's that will be using the messenger RNA platform. Monkeypox is a bit different, I think, because that's actually a smallpox vaccine, which you know, has been around and used for quite a long time. But I can't speak accurately on whether that's the one that we're all buying up at the moment is a messenger RNA platform.
So with the monkeypox vaccine, is that mRNA one available now, or is it just a conventional protein-based one?
I think you're right about protein-based, but it is available because it is the smallpox vaccine that according to the companies that are marketing it, you know, has shown some activity in monkeypox, which is a related virus. But you know, the what clinical trials there are. Well, in fact, the FDA has already acknowledged that anybody taking the monkeypox vaccine or the smallpox vaccine for monkeypox will be part of the clinical trial.
Hmm. Well, I did say before, is it monkeypox or is it moneypox? Because I think the whole lot of them, there seems to be billions and billions of dollars of profits, and the evidence is not there, obviously, for safety because it's such new technology. I could talk a lot more about that, but we do need to go to the news headlines, and I have plenty of questions after the news headlines. This is TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. The fall of Facebook continues as more and more people abandon the once leading social media site for newer platforms. Elon Musk has reportedly fired almost all of Twitter's employees at its sole African office in Ghana. And Eastern European countries are reportedly bracing for a new wave of Ukrainian refugees as temperatures plummet in the coming months.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, and my guest is Dr. Matt Shelton. Now, Matt, I did have a look at your media release that you put out with concerns about reproductive risk or reward, quite concerning aspects there. But before we go into that, I'd just like to discuss the when we discuss these mRNA shots, what aspects of these medications are risky or unknown?
Well, it's a case of where do we start, really. I mean, there are fats, for instance, that have never been tested in humans before, either on their own and certainly not used together. And the genetic code that is supposedly inside of these tiny little lipid nanoparticles, these little fat globules, itself is looking, well, in fact, the whole composition is turning out to be very, very variable. And one of my colleagues, Sasha Latipova, who writes for TrialSite News, has done some amazing work showing just how, how frankly impossible it is, given the many different countries and companies involved in providing different bits of what ultimately goes into the vial that's shipped around to us, and the scaling up of the manufacturing process, how likely that is to produce huge variability that may explain some of the data that's come out already around some batches being much more associated with side effects and deaths than others. The lipid nanoparticles are also coated in something called polyethylene glycol, which is there to help the particles sort of dissolve their way through the cell membrane. And many people already have pre-existing allergies to that. So people who have an immediate anaphylactic reaction are likely to be reacting to that component. There's this mysterious stuff called hydrogel, and two code names, if you like, for substances that the manufacturers haven't disclosed, you know, what they are and what's in them. Who knows? We're part of a group of people who are, you know, looking very hard and asking questions about what seems to be contamination. And we don't need to go any further than that. We don't need to explain what's in there and what it might be there for. Because, you know, there are things in these vaccines that are proven to be, metallic and very unusual metals, for instance, that regulatory authorities are ignoring all around the world. So, even the things that are supposed to be in there, we really don't have long-term data. And it looks like there are things that aren't being disclosed, and it's not what it says on the tin.
That's a big problem. And I've seen several reports about that. And I wonder whether certain things are being put in that weren't supposed to be there. I wonder all sorts of things. Also, the temperature that it has to be held at is extremely low, and if for whatever reason it got into an environment where the temperature went up a bit, perhaps it could be a problem. If you got some thoughts on that?
Well, there's certainly been inconsistencies and moving goalposts around the, you know, the technical aspects of storage and for how long it can be out of deep freeze and just in a normal fridge, and how long it is before it expires. So, you know, I think it just adds to the list of unknowns and the inevitable unknowns, given how quickly this was all rushed through, and how far we've departed from any norms around producing medications, testing them, and certainly before we ever even dream of giving them to pregnant women, children, breastfeeding women. You know, it's just beyond any any norms, and it boggles belief that
it certainly does.
People are not looking at this, or at least officials aren't anyway.
I was thinking from day one, it boggles belief that they'd even consider injecting children. I couldn't understand that. Now, moving on, because I know you're concerned about the reproductive risks of mRNA jabs. Can you take us through these risks or what we don't know?
Well, I mean, there are risks at every stage. From preconception. So what about fertility? To what about the effects on embryogenesis and the development of the organ systems and the development of the baby? What are the risks of stillbirths? What are the risks of miscarriages, actually, in the early part of pregnancy? What might be happening with breastfeeding? What might be happening in the baby once it's been born and as it develops? There was no reassuring data beforehand, but magicked up out of thin air was this idea that it was safe and effective. And people are still being told that it is safe in every stage of pregnancy. But there was, there was research that came out of what clinical trial there was, the 2 or 3 months that was then used to approve this product. A number of women actually got pregnant. They weren't supposed to, but they did. And Pfizer conveniently lost the details of several hundred of these women, but of the 33 women whose details they did have, there were only 2 or 3 live births out of those 30. And then immediately that the vaccine program was rolled out in earnest, the earliest signals in the VAERS and the other sort of passive reporting systems with those to do with reproductive health, so miscarriage and stillbirth particularly. And then there were the accounts that started coming in of abnormal menstrual bleeding, bleeding in very young young girls and in people a long way past the menopause, and heavy bleeding in other people. And then, we've had now in New Zealand, it was offered to pregnant women from about June. And then 3 months later, a couple of our hospital areas started showing increases in stillbirths for those months. But then the data has stopped being released because there's always a lag anyway. And for this year, a couple of areas reported the numbers of stillbirths that you typically see in a year by halfway through the year. So there's definitely something going on there, and we're hearing from midwives, and many of whom, of course, have been kicked out of the health service and are not being allowed back in, even though we've supposedly dropped our mandates and the government is saying, it's back to business as usual. You still can't get a job in the public health service if you're unvaccinated and boosted. So we're hearing from some insiders who are still able to work. And there are some midwives who are mandated who are working in a private capacity or working in the communities. And they are talking about much higher levels of things like miscarriage and stillbirth.
That's a real concern. And it's just boggles belief that the nurses are still forced to take the jabs and the boosters, they must be really terrified, because they would have to be seeing some cases of myocarditis and pericarditis and all the different problems and adverse reactions. They must be seeing more of those cases, and even amongst themselves. Why isn't there a complete revolt in the healthcare system?
Well, look, that's the $6 million question, Jeremy, really. Why? We all have a different tolerance, and we all have, we're all different people. But at the end of the day, we try and move from fear, and it just depends what your hierarchy of fears are, in terms of how you'll behave. And there is, there are very powerful forces that operate in hierarchies and in professions. There's sort of collusions of silence, and there's fear of being shamed if you speak out. But lots of people, did speak out, and they voted with their feet and they left. And I don't know about your health service, but we're, hearing every day, even as the weather improves and the winter illness season is supposed to be receding, that, there are dreadful staff shortages. And we have all these, very well trained and conscientious people who are desperate to get back to work and help out, who are, locked at home. And, a lot of the people that left were speaking out and were asking questions and have told us, the stories of what they were seeing while they were in there. And we're posting some of those on our website to try and, show these sort of ongoing threads of the pressures that are on medical staff, essentially, to toe the line. And we talk a lot about this thing called the gambler's fallacy, where your luck turns bad and bad things are happening, and you just think, if I can just hang in there long enough, things will get better. And I think a lot of people feel that they're so far into this personally that they just cannot, that they cannot give up now, and they just hope at some stage it'll all be over, and they're not the first one, to be asked some difficult questions. But it's a disaster by any, by anybody's definition, and there'll be a lot of pieces to pick up. But there are, there are also people, brave people, staying in the system, gritting their teeth, doing their best to try and help people as best they can. And look, somebody has to stay in. But we could do with a lot more people speaking out. And if 5 or 10% of doctors right at the beginning had said, this is crap, you never ever force somebody to take a treatment that they don't want, especially an experimental one, this thing would have been over before it started.
You'd only need that number 5 or 10%
on everyone.
It's very difficult when you're the only one, but if you had a few colleagues standing beside you saying yes, he's right or she's right, that is powerful. But when you're the only one, it's very, very difficult. And I think a lot of people, they just don't have that courage to say, no, this is wrong. But all credit to you, and you have, and I've actually done a few searches on the internet and seen some of your speeches, and you've attended the rallies, and it's just great to see people like yourself speaking out, because you are the silent minority, but you're not silent. You're a vocal minority, but there's this silent majority who must know something's really wrong. Matt, can you tell me, do you have an idea of how many in the healthcare sector have left, just an idea of numbers, who have left because they just can't stand it anymore?
I'm sorry, Jeremy, I don't have. There are various numbers being bandied around. We know that before November the 15th, which was the date by which, if you hadn't had your first jab, you knew that you were going to lose your job if you're in a mandated profession, that just Auckland DHB had 3,000 people who had up to that point refused to take a vaccine. Now, of course, many of those caved, and we've got 800 or so nurses who've banded together in their organisation. There's over 200 of us now, doctors here in New Zealand, some of whom are still working, keeping their heads down, and of course don't want to be named publicly. The medical council is busy enough, dealing with the ones that it does know about. So, you know, you've got to have some sympathy for them, I suppose, or at least their admin team anyway. So no, we don't have clear figures, but certainly it's a significant chunk who are really, really needed. And I'm mindful of the survey that's just come out of the NHS in the UK, where 40% of senior doctors are saying that they're going to be leaving in the next year because they've had enough and they can't be part of it anymore. 40%.
It's huge.
Now that's a sort of, you know, brain drain that the NHS may never recover from. And to listen to the government, you know, not really speaking up about it, you'd think it was baked in the cake. You'd think they'd wanted some kind of wholesale destruction of the public health system. And you know, it's hard not to escape that possibility.
Maybe that's part of the plan. Maybe there's no intention to have proper health care, and they don't care if the nurses and the doctors leave, because at the end of the day, these governments are a part of a bigger agenda. There's big money behind all the multinationals who are pushing certain agendas, the big tech, and it's never been about health. It's you don't lock people down in their homes and force them out of jobs and all the things that have been done. It's never been about our health. So maybe that was the intention all along. Now, we do need to go to a break, and then we'll be right back after the break. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
With more than a few races yet to be called, the real winners and losers of yesterday's midterms are already apparent. The night's biggest winner was GOPE, the establishment Republicans. With sizable wins by J.D. Vance in the Ohio Senate race and Ron DeSantis' blowout re-election as Florida governor, combined with losses by several Trump-endorsed America First candidates, including incumbent Lauren Boebert in Colorado 3, the establishment solidified its dominance over the party apparatus. Indeed, it did not go unnoticed during the run-up to the elections that Mitch McConnell, the RNC, and the House and Senate congressional committees were starving America First candidates of much-needed cash down the stretch. The night's big loser? The Constitution. Although Republicans will control the House and perhaps the Senate come January 3rd, there will be no holding DOJ and FBI accountable for their crimes, nor will there be any serious efforts to fix the electoral problems of 2020 and now 2022. But the fight does not end. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Who is Klaus Schwab, and what is the World Economic Forum which he leads? Just quoting Klaus Schwab is alarming enough. If he and his billionaire friends achieve their Great Reset, tyranny would be the new world order. Born in Ravensburg, Germany in 1938, Klaus Schwab is a child of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich, a political state regime built on fear and violence, on brainwashing and control, on propaganda and lies. While the Nazis desired a new order for Germany that would last 1,000 years, Klaus Schwab's vision extends globally and would potentially be unstoppable were nations to relinquish all sovereignty and adopt the neurotechnologies and biotechnologies which forces us, in the words of Klaus Schwab, to question what it means to be human.
There is no such thing as a journalist that echoes state propaganda. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, and my guest is Dr. Matt Shelton. Now, Matt, we do need solutions because I know that your organization, New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science, you do have a vision. What are you calling for?
Well, the most obvious thing is an immediate stop to the vaccination rollout. We think it's harmful beyond any need to argue the point anymore. And we've been delivering the evidence of that to government authorities since the very beginning. And of course, we're not alone. You know, all countries that are heavily vaccinated are showing exactly the same really, really worrying and stunning rises in things like all-cause mortality, excess deaths, affecting every demographic, including children. And you know, you're never less likely to die in your life in the Western world than between about 11 and 13. And yet, you know, there are people in that age group who are suddenly and desperately, tragically dying. And like some of their older, older peers, there's a real appearance of things being swept under the carpet. And I hope we've all heard of, the sports people and the young athletes. Science is starting to give us an explanation as to why it might be that you have this vaccine and the machinery inside the cells is changed, and why that's going to affect the electrical activity of the heart and the function of the heart muscle. Given also that the heart is incredibly richly supplied with blood, it's a pump that's working your whole life, and the heart muscle is very specialized and it needs huge amounts of blood so it can do what it can do. So it's actually no surprise that cardiac inflammation is a side effect. And this, again, like the pregnancy data, the real world numbers, just asking around and knowing what's going on in your peer group and your friends and family and work colleagues tells you actually how much more common cardiac inflammation is than the phrase that's been used is vanishingly rare at the moment in New Zealand to still try and keep us distracted. But as I say, you've only got to look around and talk to friends and family to see the extent of serious side effects from these medications. So we're calling for an immediate cessation. And obviously there will have to be an investigation into this whole thing, but it's looking more and more, as you say, Jeremy, that the health sides, that's the only side I really claim any professional expertise, is part of a bigger picture, because at the same time we're dealing with this, it seems like our food's under attack, our water's under attack, energy, the economy's being devastated. There are crises on every front that means it's hard to know where to look first. But we cannot and must not let the health side and particularly the rushed, inadequately tested and now covered up, frankly, vaccination program, be brushed under the carpet.
Exactly right. Well, very well said. In Australia, we have mRNA facilities being built, and including in the city where I live in Melbourne. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think the first question you asked me, or in your intro, you talked about that. We have the same thing here. There's a facility in Auckland and a facility in Oamaru, one of which is going to be making messenger RNA and the other will be making the lipid nanoparticles. And I can't remember at this stage which way round it is, but it seems like there's a plan for, these things to almost become part of the staple diet of people. To be able to churn out that amount that quickly, you have to wonder how long the ability to decline these things is going to last. We know that it's now been used extensively and very rapidly rolled out in the animal world, which obviously will make its way into the food chain. So I just don't know what the plan is, but it certainly ain't good. And there is no way that they can claim that it's been proven safe or effective, certainly not in the case of COVID.
The evidence is already in. We have our Therapeutics Goods Administration database of adverse effects and reactions. It's really quite horrific to see the many, many thousands of very serious adverse reactions, and that's official government data. And the media silence on the whole thing, it's just really quite shocking. The government is really embarking on some risky business. Do you see some problems down the line for government getting caught up in this agenda legally or otherwise?
Well, I really hope there are big problems for them, because the whole thing is completely unconscionable. There was never any justification, ever, no matter how bad we were told COVID was at the beginning, 3 or 4% mortality rate, which was, 200 times what even only a month or two later it was shown to be. There was never any justification for rushing it through and compelling people, forcing people, literally torturing people psychologically and emotionally to take this product. And I really hope that somebody, you know, somebody is held to account. You know, and there are signs already that there's a pivot in the messaging from mainstream media, and that maybe, you know, maybe mistakes were made. But mistakes were made on both sides. And maybe we should all forgive and forget and move on. Well, you know, nobody, I haven't heard anybody saying sorry yet, and explaining what and why they did, and saying they won't do it again. You know, there's a lot of water under the bridge that society will demand, you know, and it'll want to be part of that process. And I can see it taking, you know, a generation or more to recover from what's been done in a couple of years.
The damage has been immense, and the lack of trust. There will be many people like myself. We just won't trust the medical establishment probably for the rest of our lives. I mean, it's just how could you, when you've been coerced to take something which you know is potentially deadly, how could you ever trust the establishment again unless there was overthrow of the leadership positions and those companies are unless there's some major legal, you know, justice, I think I could never trust the medical establishment again.
Well, I think we'd have to get, patients would have to know that the government has been got out of the consultation rooms, you know, and doctors now free to follow their training, follow their conscience, and have the interest of the patient in front of them center stage. And the same in the hospitals. You know, we've got to remove any element of managed care, of instructions from above, you know, any coercion or rewards. You know, all of that has got to be taken away, and people have got to see that it's been taken away. And you know, people are going to need to stand up and be held to account, and that's going to have to be visible. You know, I don't see any other way, and it's going to happen.
Well, it has to. I remember several years ago before COVID, you know, I knew that there was some problems in Big Pharma. I wasn't naive about it. In fact, I've been urged by doctors to take certain drugs, and I say, no, thank you. I don't want that. You know, for cholesterol, for example, statins. And, you know, that was okay. You know, I don't have to take it. But now, you must take it or you lose your job. That's just insane. And that rang the alarm bells for me. So I think a lot of people have had the same experience, and we must have justice there. Now, the shots have been highly subsidized. I mean, the shots were basically here in Australia, you know, it's free and it's safe and it's effective. And well, it wasn't free at all. There are billions and billions of dollars of our taxpayer money that went to Pfizer and Moderna and various companies. Now, these deals, these business deals, they seem to be highly confidential in many ways. What do you think about that? And should the details of the deals be available? I think you would say yes.
Oh, of course. Of course they should. But that was the decision that was made really early on. That was the whole basis of Operation Warp Speed, was that the companies would have secrecy and liability protection. You know, all right, you know, commercial sensitivity, that, you know, that abounds, but who knows what else was done, you know, behind that cloak of secrecy. And there are questions that you know, we are asking as loud as we can, about what, you know, what else is there in these vaccines, because something is killing people. Something is causing an unprecedented wave of huge range of side effects. You know, at some point the community is just going to, it will have had enough. And if it's not being protected by our regulators and politicians, and the police aren't interested in investigating any sort of crime, then you know, what option do people have left? You know, and this is the world that my family, my child is facing. And I'm certainly not going to sit around wondering if somebody else is going to fix it. You know, I think we've all got skin in the game. We all have to revise our history of the 20th century, because it's all there. What happens if you take your eye off the ball? People will become corrupted, and before they know it, they've seized power. You know, and it's up to us to do something.
Yes, I agree. Now, we only have 1 minute left. If you can just quickly, or first of all, how can people find out more about New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science?
Well, we've got a website that's pretty busy, actually. It's nzdsos.com. So we post on matters. There's an awful lot of stuff, some great work that people are doing all around the world. And of course, it's hard to keep up, but we try and sort of post on a representative sample of the most important developments and the best writing. We mix local concerns and show the international context as well. And we write letters constantly to, all the regulators, all the people who are paid and the people that have voted in to have our interests at heart. There'll be a record in the public domain, and they can't say that they didn't know.
Exactly right. Very well said. Well, great to have you on TNT Radio, Dr. Matt Shelton. Time is up right now. We're going to the news.